I just want to say I see a few familiar faces in the crowd. I did give this talk on some sort of slightly modified yesterday, so bear with me, and maybe you'll get something new out of it today. So I'm going to talk about building coalitions around global health and national security, how soldiers and scientists can work together to advance international health advocacy. I have no relationships to disclose. So I work for Oxfam America. Oxfam was founded 70 years ago to help support people suffering from a famine in Greece. We have expanded our work to three main platforms. The first one remains humanitarian aid. So if there's an emergency anywhere around the world, we're there and we're saving lives. The second platform of our work is long-term development programming with communities. So around the world, we work with communities to find innovative solutions to agricultural challenges, to women's rights issues. We're in 92 countries around the world. And finally, even if we were in every country, and even if we had $1 billion to spend on all of this programming, we believe there are still rules and laws that are put in place that keep people trapped in poverty. And so the third major leg of our work is to do advocacy, policy, and campaigning to change those rules and laws. And one of the things that we advocate for most enthusiastically is for effective foreign aid. Right now, we have major budget challenges in the United States, and foreign aid is always put on the chopping block because I think a lot of Americans don't understand how it impacts our lives. So, little quiz. If you can read that, you'll know the answer. But what percent of our U.S. budget goes to foreign aid? Less than 1%. Absolutely. So we at Oxfam like to say that cutting foreign aid to save the budget deficit is like cutting your hair to lose weight, which you could do, but it's really not what you want to do. It's really not effective. And Americans generally agree. The Kaiser Family Foundation did a poll which found that people thought that we actually spend 27% of our budget on foreign aid. And they did think it should be less. They thought it should be how many percent? What? Five up. 10. They thought it should be about 10. They thought it should be 10 times what it actually is. And people are really particularly supportive of global health. So half the people in the study thought that we should spend less on foreign aid, but only 21% of people in the study thought we should spend less on global health. So global health is a real important thing for Americans. They get it. Congress does not necessarily get it. They do not necessarily get it. And so what Oxfam has been doing is building coalitions with what we call strange bedfellows. And I always joke about this. I really do have to look up the origin of that phrase because it is uncomfortable. But anyway, we are getting together with strange bedfellows and trying to find different levers of influence around foreign aid funding, which includes a lot of funding on global health. So we've been working with national security allies, with progressive veterans groups, to bring the voice of folks who've served in the military to talk about their experiences and what development can mean for peace. So how do we do that? What do we mean when we talk about global health and national security? Two ways to define national security, and global health fits in both. The first one is a very strict military definition, something which, you know, national security is about military intervention. And certainly global health fits into that. So troop health, infectious diseases, bioterrorism. So we can certainly talk about global health and national security in that lens. But that's a very militaristic lens. So let's find another one. There is another more expansive view of what constitutes security for us in America and for people around the world. So this is talking about actions or events that threaten to drastically degrade the quality of life for the inhabitants of a state or threaten significantly to narrow the range of policy choices available to a government. That's what we're talking about when we talk about national security. It's not just something that a military has to intervene in, but it's when people are in danger and when governments are unstable. So we have to ask ourselves, how can we help build stability in fragile democracies? How can we help build governance? How can we give people dignity? How can we do that? Public health. Public health. So I've got this great new term that I just learned from my friend Shelley. Development is a primary preventative method. Yeah? So investing in global health, combating climate change, increasing food security, saving lives. That's what we're talking about. So for the rest of this presentation, I am going to use the term national security a lot. What I mean by that is global health is a bridge to peace, and promoting peace is the best way to promote national security by avoiding war and conflict. again, that primary preventative method, which I'm now going to use all the time. But I am going to use the term national security. Why? Because I'm talking to members of Congress who, if I knock on their door and say I'd like to talk about peace, they are not going to open that door. And we got to stop preaching to the choir, because the choir, unfortunately, right now does not have the power. So, you may know this, peace was the foundation of a lot of U.S. International development work, including USAID. President Kennedy wanted to prevent the collapse of developing country governments because it would be disastrous to our national security, harmful to our comparative prosperity, and offensive to our conscience. He was not the only president who felt that way. Another president said this lovely thing, a world order of peace and justice. Who said that? Close. Nixon. So both sides of the aisle use this language, and again, we need to use this language. So the Obama administration is looking at comprehensive national security through the three Ds: defense, diplomacy, and development. We, as a global health community, need to make sure that development is as legitimate a leg of that stool as defense and diplomacy. I'll give you a brief example of why this is important. Dr. Levy said last night that the first $200 billion spent in Iraq could have reduced hunger around the world by 50%. And combated AIDS, and brought clean water and sanitation and vaccinations to some crazy high percentage of the world. Crazy high percentage. Right now in Yemen, almost half the population is hungry. 1 million children are facing starvation in Yemen. Do we want that? Do we need to send soldiers, or do we need to send food? And do we need to send agricultural capacity building? And do we need to help Yemen develop? Which one's better? Yes, primary preventative method. I love that. Okay, so Hillary Clinton's working on this a lot, but she's not the only Secretary of State who is into this. So we had a Secretary of State who said that international development is a vital investment to the free, prosperous, and peaceful international order that fundamentally serves our national interest. Who said that? Ooh, somebody's seen this presentation before. It was Condi. So again, both sides of the aisle are talking about this. So what are the tools that we can use? Oxfam has built collaborations across four different areas with progressive military and veterans, progressive veterans groups, I should say. We don't work directly with the military. So we work with them to build analytical frameworks around development and national security, to do policy analysis, to do research, and to do advocacy. So I'm going to just go through those four frames. So the first tool that we have built collaborations around is an analysis of the primary preventative method around development and national security. So we worked with the Truman National Security Project to create a development manual that looks at the links between foreign aid and national security. We came up with these seven ways that investing in international development can build security. So fighting terrorism and radicalism, reducing weapons proliferation, preventing sudden government collapse, mitigating refugee flows, fending off disease, climate change, and other threats, preventing conflict and genocide, and improving the way people around the world view America. So I encourage you all to check out that development manual and get a little bit more in depth about what all of these mean, and to find the ways that global health fit into all of these. So again, we sort of go from that framework into an even more simple one. Development saves lives around the world, and it saves blood and treasure in the United States. Again, I'm going to use a lot of quotes here because I want us all to see the language that everybody uses. Former Defense Secretary Robert Gates has said that development is a lot cheaper than sending soldiers, and that if we can develop and build stability, we may not have to send soldiers. So that's really very important. So the number two tool that we've used in collaboration with progressive veterans groups is analyzing U.S. policy. And this is really important. It's important to know what policies are out there around global health and peace and national security. So we've got the Global Health Strategy and the Global Health Initiative. Who's read them? Anybody? Check them out. They're sort of public healthy kind of things to read. These are not as much. The National Security Strategy, the Quadrennial Diplomacy and Development Review, and the Quadrennial Defense Review. This is not stuff that we talk about so much in the public health world, and we should. So we work with organizations to look at these when they come out and to understand what the implications are for our work around advocacy for international development. So the National Security Strategy has what you'd expect. It does have militarism in there. It's got Iraq. It's got Afghanistan. It's got international order. But it also talks about prosperity and values. And this is incredibly important for us as advocates to know. Human rights are in the national security strategy. Global health strategy is within that strategy. Lots of strategies here. Polio eradication. New and fragile democracies delivering tangible improvements for their citizens. One of the number one ones is health. Climate change and food security. All of those are in a national security strategy. And again, we need to advocate to make sure that those preventative measures are as strong as the military ones. The QDDR and the QDR also have aspects that talk about global health as an economic and national security vehicle. So tool number three is collaborating on research and study. And again, Shelley mentioned that there is not enough research in the global health world that is looking at global health as a way to prevent war, and generally we need a lot more of that. So we have partnered with the Center for Naval Affairs to look at climate change and humanitarian risks around the world and how that might impact both governments and militaries. The Truman National Security Project does a lot of research. The Center for Strategic and International Studies has some great papers, but we need a lot more. We need a lot more. It can be hard to measure what would have happened in the absence of aid or in the absence of a global health program, but we have to start to figure out how to tell those stories and to get the scientific data out there. So again, that development stool can be as strong as the defense one. And finally, we partner with vet groups to do advocacy towards Congress to support foreign aid, including global health funding. So we've done a whole bunch of fly-ins and lobby days and summits in D.C. where we bring together these strange bedfellows. So we bring together colonels with members of the League of Women Voters, with former lieutenant governors, with organic farmers, with faith leaders, with private sector VPs, all sorts of people who are able to tell different stories of how global health and how foreign aid impacts the United States and the world. And I have to be, you know, quite honest, when we bring a vet into a congressperson's office, we always get a meeting, and we often get a meeting with that congressperson. People who have served our country in that way are deeply respected in Congress, as they should be, as a lot of sacrifices have been made. It's a great partnership, and these are vets who've seen the worst of war, and they know in a way that I will never know that if you build systems and if you support people and if you give people hope, then they might actually not have to do their job. And that's not a bad thing. So we do a lot of work in D.C. We have also done a lot of work in states where there are important senators or congressmen on the Appropriations Committee for Foreign Operations, which votes on global health, for instance. So we've done a lot of work in South Carolina with Lindsey Graham, media work, op-eds, letters to the editor from veterans talking about these links between development, peace, and national security. And I will end with a quote from Lindsey Graham, Republican senator from South Carolina. And I just think it's really interesting, and I don't know that we would use all of these words, but I think I'm going to read them all anyway. To the American taxpayer, we need to be investing in improving people's lives before the terrorists try to take over. Stay ahead of them, not with 100,000 troops all the time, but by partnering with people who will live in peace with us. The worst nightmare for Al-Qaeda is to come into a community that feels supported and has hope. So when we're talking about peace, we're talking about hope. And when we're talking about hope, we're talking about kids who are healthy, moms who are healthy, and communities who are healthy. Thank you.